Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount. Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit arrcled.com.
Today's cool fact of the day is that we're starting to think that up to half of the water here on Earth is older than the sun. And the working theory is that the water on the Earth was left over from the cloud of gas that formed the sun itself. We're also thinking that that interstellar water would be included in the formation of other stellar systems and maybe even other Earth-like planets. So it's kind of interesting to think about that, that all that interesting biology, the stuff going on inside your meat, is using water molecules that might be older than the sun. Kind of makes you feel like you already have a bit of an anti-aging practice, right?
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat Cold Tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500.
Today's guest is one of the world's foremost experts in the field of environmental medicine. He's got 30 years of medical practice. He's been a faculty member at four different naturopathic medical schools and was the founding department chair for environmental medicine at the Southwest College of Naturopathic Medicine in Arizona. He's also a prolific writer, and he's been a guest on ABC with Barbara Walters, where he's talked about toxic compounds in the environment and how we can protect ourselves. This is none other than Dr. Walter Crinian. Walter, welcome to the show.
Dave, thanks so much for having me on. It's an honor.
Likewise. You've spent a lot more of your life than I have working on this problem of toxins in the environment. Yet, I still run into these people online who sort of believe, oh, I'm tired of the word toxin. There's no such thing as toxins. Everything's a toxin. What do you say when people look at your life's work and say there's no such thing as toxins or everything's a toxin and they don't matter?
Well, that's one of the difficulties, because when one starts talking about the load of environmental toxicants and toxins in the air, water, personal care product, and food, for many, it seems so overwhelming and so absolutely dire and hopeless that they go the other way, to really put their heads in the sand and say, well, I'm going to die anyway, so don't talk to me about it. It is an issue. The opening for me is when people come to me with these chronic health problems that they have been unable to get better via any other means. And then I start talking about this and they listen, because I actually was able to give them answers, to give them ways out of the toxic burden. And I have had the great joy, Dave, to see chronic illnesses reverse, spontaneous remissions.
Magically.
magic spontaneous remissions in things including Lou Gehrig's disease, certain cancers, Parkinsonism. Autoimmunity is like a slam dunk. It's like handing Michael Jordan the ball in a ball game and saying, do you think he can make a basket? I mean, cleansing with autoimmunity, any form of autoimmunity, and it's very easy to do. So it's interesting that the vast majority of the biggest chronic illnesses are all related to the buildup of environmental toxicants in our body.
So for people who aren't familiar with autoimmune diseases are, there's a whole host of them, but it's basically when something tricks the body, your immune system, into attacking some part of the body. And things that you might not know are autoimmune, things like some forms of arthritis, perhaps Alzheimer's disease, perhaps Parkinson's, and a bunch of other, even cardiac issues, can be basically your immune system getting pointed to the wrong things. So you're saying toxins have a direct role in that.
They have a very direct role in that. For years, we've known, those of us in environmental medicine have used the term immunotoxicity. And in immunotoxicity, or toxic effect on your immune system becomes imbalanced in a very interesting way. The ability to fight viruses, fungi, and those things, the acute infections goes down. So people get chronic infections like Lyme's disease, Candida, Epstein-Barr, cytomegalo. And then they get increased allergies.
I had that.
And asthma. And then they can get autoimmunity. This is a well-documented immune system imbalance. We know exactly what the chemicals that the immune system puts out, called cytokines. We know what is going on with here, and it's documented what causes it. Now, it is linked to not enough glutathione in your white blood cells, but there is a list as long as your arm of all the common environmental toxicants that do this. And all I would do with my patients is reduce their circulating level of toxicants. Their immune system rebalances, and then their rheumatoid arthritis goes away, or their Hashimoto's thyroiditis, or their lupus, or scleroderma, or a whole host of other problems would magically disappear, and the blood markers for these would go away as well.
It's funny, my Hashimoto's blood markers entirely went away, just like you're saying.
Yep.
Now, you use an interesting word, though. You talk about toxicants rather than toxins. And you actually have a different meaning for toxicant. What's the difference between a toxicant and a toxin?
The basis is that a toxin is something that is produced by a living organism. So, black widow, spider, bite. Mm-hmm. Cobra, bite. Mold, mycotoxins.
One of my favorites.
Botulinum toxin, you know, Botox. Mm-hmm. So those are all poisonous substances made by living organisms. Toxicants, C-A-N-T-S, are not made by living organisms. So that's where you've got
chemicals,
primarily chemicals, but also heavy metals. And that is the huge burden on our bodies, which, the CDC has been doing ongoing study, and you can just go to their website. It's cdc.gov/exposure report. And they've been doing this ongoing study for the last 15, 20 years, looking at the toxicants in the average U.S. resident. And they're now up to, I believe it's about 140 that are found ubiquitously in, 98% of all residences of North America. And the vast majority of those are air pollutants, solvents, plasticizers, BPA, the Teflon and Scotchgard chemicals. There are all these things that used to certainly not be on my radar, because my radar initially was for the persistent pollutants, the chlorinated pesticides, DDT, and PCBs. And yes, those are there, but, the organophosphate pesticides that...
Way worse.
All these things I didn't pay attention to because their half-life in the blood is so short. They weren't persistent. But because we're exposed to them every day, they're in our bodies every day.
Yeah.
And I actually did the math. I went through the CDC report. I did the math, adding up the totals of all these things in the blood and urine. Over 80% by volume of all those daily 24-hour-a-day toxicants are all non-persistent. So it's the air we breathe. It's the food we eat. Most of it is coming from our air in our homes. That's the vast majority of it. And then food, and then personal care products.
So one of the ones that's interesting is BPA. And this is bisphenol A. It's common in plastics. And I read about this in my book about things that affect pregnancy called The Better Baby Book, looking at environmental effects and everything you can do to increase the healthy outcomes for your pregnancy. And there's a few people online saying, oh, BPA doesn't last in the body long enough to matter. In fact, here's a government report that says, even pregnant women should have BPA. It doesn't matter. And it's irrelevant. That was kind of my response. They're usually like the skeptic community where it's like everything is science based. If you ignore six of seven types of evidence, then it's evidence based. That sort of thing.
Right.
But it's an interesting. What do you say when someone says, "Well, this comes in and goes out so fast that it's irrelevant to our body"?
Well, I totally understand that because that's how I used to think.
Okay.
I used to be guilty of that exact same thought until the CDC started looking at these other compounds. And before that, all that was in the published medical literature for looking at body burden of toxic compounds was all the persistence, DDT, yep. PCBs. That's all they had. So maybe I probably wasn't the only one that had this misconception. But when the CDC started doing these ongoing year after year studies for thousands and thousands of U.S. residents, and they're finding levels of bisphenol A and at least six different phthalates or plasticizers and Scotchgard and Teflon chemicals and organophosphate pesticides that were first developed in the 1930s for warfare nerve gas. And we're finding all of these non-persistent things that leave the body quickly in everybody. That made me start and take notice. But on top of that, Dave, there is how I spend my day is reviewing published medical and scientific reports that are now on PubMed or, the Medline. National Library of Medicine from the National Institutes of Health. It's available to everybody, online. And there are wonderful reports there. Now, with BPA, a lot of them are from infertility clinics or other individuals, other docs working with various endocrine disorders. I just reviewed an article on BPA and the adverse and causing in women who had fetuses that were developmentally delayed. So these fetuses, they were pregnant, had chromosomal differences in them, abnormalities, and you know as well as I that, when I started practice, I actually delivered babies, okay? Did home delivery on babies. Back then, I don't remember knowing a family that had a special needs kid.
I've only done home delivery on two babies, but they were okay.
Yeah.
they would be mine.
Yeah. But now it's more common than not to have special needs kids. So that's this true. Study was looking at these moms who were pregnant with kids that were going to be special needs kids. And this is what was really interesting. They looked at the BPA levels in the women who had these developmental disabilities in the kids, or developmental differences, versus moms that didn't, that had normal developing fetuses. And they looked at the types of BPA. And once BPA is metabolized by the liver, it becomes non-toxic. It doesn't cause damage to the fetus. Well, the women with the kids, the fetuses that were developmentally, had developmental disorder, they couldn't properly clear BPA.
Which requires glutathione, doesn't it?
It does, both, sulfur transferase, which is, you need sulfur and you need the transferase enzymes, but then it also does glucuronyl transferase, yep. where you need a glucuronate, which is the primary one. But women that can't make that jump, they're the ones that get the problem. So it was a very interesting article. But, you know, your main question was, these other people aren't looking at what the CDC says, that, hey, but it's in all of us in high levels every day, and that they're actually measuring levels in people and showing association with problems. So you put two and two together, and it's duh.
I suppose there's an argument that if you lived in a bubble with no toxins at all, and you had this one toxin at this one level for one exposure, then you could make an argument that it's not harmful, and it's a reasonable argument. But what they don't study at the same time is something that I've learned about with mycotoxins, or these mold toxins, is that one of them in isolation does something, and this is a level that most people can metabolize. But then you add a second one in from a different source or from the same source, and suddenly they amplify each other in a way that's not additive. It multiplies. So suddenly 20% of the safe level of this plus 20% of the safe level of this is way more than 100% of the safe level, so then you start having biological effects.
Exactly. And in environmental medicine, the basic principle of it for all these past decades has been total load.
Yep.
We have a load on us. And what I've seen is individuals come to me, and the majority of the time they have no idea what made them what started this illness, you know. But sometimes I do, and I say it's when I put that carpet in, or when I got the fillings in, or when I was in the moldy house, or when, you know, I was from the pesticide spray. They all want to point to something, and they'll often, and some of them do have this incident. You know, when I moved into the new house, the brand spanking new house, I've been sick ever since. Okay. That was the straw that broke the camel's back. But you had a total load building up before that, and that's what pushed you over the edge.
Even Suzanne Summers was just on Bulletproof Radio, and she moved into a house with mold, and same thing. Like, all of a sudden, she felt it right away because she's learned to have that awareness.
Right. And most people are totally unconscious, you know, about that stuff.
You just
completely unconscious.
I feel like a zombie all the time. Mm-hmm. I remember I moved into a house with Stachybotrys many years ago. I didn't know at the time.
Oh, Dave.
And I was already sensitive to mold. I grew up in a moldy basement. I was obese, weighed 300 pounds. And, but I'd lost a lot of the weight, and suddenly it came rushing back on, and just, I never felt well. And I remember I went to the doctor and I said, I feel like I've been poisoned. Like, I don't feel like someone poisoned me, but like I just, nothing's right anymore. Mm-hmm. But I didn't correlate it with my house. And I just said, I remember vitamin C makes me feel better when I take, you know, 3 grams a day. Mm-hmm. And the doctor goes, Dave, stop. It could kill you. And I looked at the guy, and I didn't know what I know now, but I knew enough. And I said, what about Linus Pauling? And for people listening, Linus Pauling, 2 Nobel Prizes, took 90 grams of vitamin C a day and is one of the biggest proponents.
And kept terminal cancer patients alive with 10 grams a day or more.
Yeah, which can, quote, kill you. So I looked at the doctor, and he said, Linus who? And I said, you're fired. And I walked out.
Good for you.
Well, good for me, except I didn't see a doctor for 4 years. That's one of the reasons I'm a biohacker. I was like, none of these guys can help. I'm going to get to the bottom of this. So I studied stupid amounts of information because I didn't think that there was such a thing as a doctor would understand this. I didn't know that there was such a thing as environmental medicine. I didn't know what a naturopath was. And this is going, you know, back to the mid-90s, where it was much less common. And I'm lucky that I did meet the type of functional medicine practitioner, orthomolecular doctors, anti-aging doctors, environmental medicine types who do study the interaction of the environment and people and realize that it's not about handing out drugs and stopping.
This is a small group of docs that you're talking about.
It's growing fast.
Yeah, it's a small group. So yeah, I mean, I've been focusing for the last 10, 15 years to really try to teach and train other doctors about this field.
It's one of the more important things you can do because Bulletproof Radio has allowed me to interact with literally hundreds of doctors, both ones I interview like you, as well as ones who come to the Bulletproof Conference, or we just end up having these amazing conversations. And what you find is that every doctor out there, maybe not every, the vast majority of doctors out there are looking for a better interaction with patients. Like no doctor likes 3-minute visits, just in and out, because it drains them and they know they're not helping people to the full extent they can. So there's sort of pressure on one side, and then they really want this ability to help, but then there's a lack of knowledge where you're fresh out of medical school, you're like, vitamins don't work. Like the drug companies pounded that in, and then 10 years later you talk to them and they're like, I kind of take my methylated B vitamins at home because I was getting a rash when I didn't do it and they worked. And I can't recommend it to my patients though, because there's no evidence, but like I take them at home. So I feel it shifting. But after 30 years of practice, do you feel it shifting?
Yes, in many ways. Okay. Alternative medicine is now far more readily embraced than it used to be. Okay. Nutritional information is far more readily available, pretty much. I don't find anybody anymore that hasn't heard the term multivitamin. everybody knows that. So yes, it is, much more well known. We got a lot of wonderful docs out there that are practicing. It's just helping others find. And my goal right now, what I'm focusing on, is trying to help docs be able to recognize what the symptom picture is when they're in their patient. If their patient has a health problem caused by an overload of toxicants, what is the symptom picture? How do they spot that? And then how do they treat it? Whether they really want to do that form of medicine or not is kind of beside the point, but can you spot an environmental case? Because if the problem's been caused by an overload of environmental toxicants and you don't deal with it, you're just going to be chasing symptoms again, which is what a lot of docs do. They chase symptoms.
A few months ago, I released a movie called Moldy.
And yes.
You've seen it. Okay.
I was absolutely hoping you would have. Love it.
I should have sent a copy just to make sure you've seen it, but what struck me as maybe one of the most amazing interviews was a pair of physicians, normal Western physicians, a couple, and they move into a moldy house, and the wife gets sick and the husband doesn't get sick. And they're sitting there saying, look, in medical school, we learned that if someone has more than like 8 symptoms, clearly it's in their head. They're hypochondriacs. They're crazy people.
Oh, yeah.
So she's like, I had 18 symptoms. So therefore I was crazy, except my temperature was 1 degree higher. So that means that I wasn't crazy. So this poor woman spent 2 years biopsying every organ in her body to get to the bottom of what was an environmental illness caused by mold toxins in the, I think they were living in a trailer when they remodeled, or just some ridiculous thing
right,
like that.
Right.
But what was so amazing was now she's one of the leading mold doctors in Santa Barbara. And it's so interesting though, because this idea that many, many symptoms at the same time equals crazy pants and Wellbutrin, essentially, that is just not proven. In fact, I would argue, in my experience of life, there clearly are real mental disorders. But if you look at medical textbooks from 50 or 100 years ago, there's people saying, oh, look, you expose these people to cigarette smoke and they think they're Jesus. And then you take cigarette smoke out of the environment and they're themselves again. So we've had hints of this for a long time. How much of the current mental illness that's out there do you think is actually environmental illness?
Ooh, now that's a good question. Depression, which is a huge thing right now. There are so many of the environmental toxicants that are neurotoxins that cause depression, that are known to cause depression. I mean, when you just look at, if you take the top 20 toxicant compounds out there that, you know, that we're exposed to huge amounts every day. Vehicular exhaust, organophosphate pesticides, solvents, plasticizers, BPA, all these things. If you just look at those, the lists, one of the top symptoms, fatigue.
Yep.
Depression. Headache. Mood disorders, you know, mood swings.
Yeah.
Weight
PMS,
gain.
PMS.
Yeah, it's these things that we are all so used to seeing, but we become so used to it. When I had a facility up in Seattle for a couple decades where we did cleansing on patients. And the biggest thing that my patients said to me when they did the cleansing, two things. The one I heard most commonly was, "Doc, I feel like I'm 20 years younger."
Yeah.
And then they'd often come back after a few months and go, "I didn't change my diet and I lost 20 pounds." And I've come to believe that it's not us getting older, adding more birthdays to our resume. It's adding more of the toxicant load to our bodies. Of all the compounds that the CDC has documented in us, I've taken each one to PubMed, put the name of the compound in the search box, and then went, "And mitochondria."
Yes, I do that all the time. That's like my hobby.
100% of these 140 compounds that are in all of us are mitochondrial poisons. Well, yes. If you've got a mitochondrial poison in you, you're going to be tired. Your brain is not going to work. You're not going to be able to keep your weight down. You're going to have problems with diabetes. All the great health problems, so many of them are mitochondria-related disorders, including Parkinsonism, which is going up in rates dramatically as well. So when we reduce these loads, the mitochondria feel great.
They do feel great. And for people listening who don't know the role of mitochondria in the body, these are basically the power plants in the cells. They burn energy, ATP, and then it gets recycled into more energy using sugar or fat, it turns out.
Yep.
And so what this means is like there's a light. They actually make a little electron. And in fact, they make a biophoton too, we found out. So these are basically the light, the spark of life, literally, is made by mitochondria. And if you take something into the body that reduces the effectiveness of that, it's like a dimmer switch on your life. And the part of the brain with the most mitochondria is the prefrontal cortex, the most recently evolved, most human part of the brain. So, wow, if you take one of these 140 toxins you're talking about that affect your mitochondria and you dim your lights a little bit and you do it over and over and over, of course you're going to be tired because your brain's batteries aren't working right.
Mm-hmm. And the mitochondria are needed in each cell for that cell, whether it's an eye cell, a heart cell, a liver cell, a breast cell, a skin cell, muscle cell, to do its job right. So if you have body parts that aren't doing their job right,
yep.
Maybe and the mitochondria are poisoned.
And this won't be a surprise to you, but for a lot of people listening, if you're having a hard time getting pregnant, like 1 in 8 couples of any age now who cannot get pregnant without assistance, 1 in 8. So fertility is a basic sign of how resilient you are. If you're at the age when you should be fertile and you're not fertile, like something's really wrong and you're probably not going to live as long as you should. Mm-hmm. It's possible that you have a cyst or something and that there's something out of that. But if you don't know the reason, I would be really concerned about my own longevity, whether or not I was planning to have kids. And if you look at one of the big things, it's mitochondrial strength of semen. So if your swimmers aren't swimming, the odds are that your heart isn't pumping the way it could be. Your brain isn't thinking the way it could be. And it all comes down to these little mitochondria. Mm-hmm. So now we've probably got people scared going, great, like there's something dimming, you know, the spark of life in my body. What do you do as an environmental medicine doctor when someone comes in and says, all right, I want more spark. What? How do you fix the mitochondria?
Well, the first step one in environmental medicine treatment is avoidance. As I mentioned before,
yes,
over 80% of the toxins rolling around in our bloodstream are non-persistent. So if you stop taking them, having them come in your nose or in your mouth or on your skin, they're not going to be there. Give them 2 weeks, 3 weeks, you don't have any more. So that's the first step up. Suzanne Summers interviewed me for her book because she was really enthralled about my book. She gave me some great feedback on my book called Clean, Green, and Lean that takes people through their home and their diet, helps them identify what to clear out. Now, when I, you know, really hone in on those CDC information, the bulk of the compounds that are in our body are airborne. And the majority of that is from our home air. So it is critical that we get our home air taken care of. And I have my Holy Trinity that I tell people they need to do for home air. Number one, get one of the service in to suck all the dust out of the air ducts.
Yes, and the mold spores.
Yeah, because all the environmental chemicals and the mold spores aren't like free-floating so much. They're bound to dust particles. So you get a service in that sucks all that out, whether it's a new construction or been there a long time, both have reasons to do it. And then you replace your furnace filters with the high quality pleated air filters. They look like a, you know, kind of a compressed accordion. Mm-hmm. And you want the high quality pleated filters that are electrostatic. And they'll cost you $15 a pop, $15 to $20 a pop. You don't buy it.
It's pretty expensive. I mean, to get rid of toxins. Are you sure it's worth it?
Oh my goodness! you know, what people typically do are the $3.50 ones that look like it's kind of spun candy corn. You know, that keeps birds from flying through. Okay, but doesn't stop the dust.
We're talking about the cost of like two lattes.
I know.
Like it's not very much money compared to the benefits of that.
Yeah, and then you get a high-quality air purifier in the home, and not an ozone generator, and not one of those passive ones, one that actually grabs the air and forces it through heavy-duty filters.
A HEPA filter.
Yes, a HEPA filter, and typically they have about three different filters in it. And there's, there's a number of companies out there that are excellent. IQ Air, Blue Air, Austin Air, EL Faust, Allermed, or Aller Air. These are all at the top of the heap. You know, they all have excellent machines. Just by doing that, now Dave, this is something I've been talking seriously about. I've been doing conferences for the last 4 years on annual updates in environmental medicine, and this year we're changing it to Environmental Health Symposium. We're actually going to have a day on mold.
Oh, wow. When is that? I want to come.
San Diego, you're invited. If you want to do a showing of your movie, you can.
Please, let's hook up after this. Yeah, I'd love to. Give us the dates. Where can people find out more?
It's March 4th to 6th.
Okay.
And we're actually going to have Dr. Giles-Eric Seralini, the French researcher, did all the research on glyphosate, Roundup.
Oh, love it.
We're going to bring him in. I'm very excited about this. About 2 or 3 years ago, we did one focusing on reproduction. And do you know that the closer couples live to a busy roadway, the less likely they are to be able to conceive?
Yes. Busy roadways are bad for kids, too.
And there's now been about 8 articles published. There were initial group in L.A., and then now they've done it in other cities in the country. The closer a pregnant mom lives to a busy roadway, the higher her risks of having an autistic child. And if that child continues to live by that busy roadway, their autism gets worse. Now, why this hasn't been front page news, I have no bloody idea. But the point is that you can buy a nice, good quality air purifier. You're going to spend close to $1,000. Okay. That's just how it is. But that could make one, it could be a marital aid in your bedroom because you might be able to get pregnant. And two, $1,000 to keep a child from becoming autistic, you're changing that child's entire life and your own life.
So preventing autism from happening in the first place is one of my core missions. The reason I wrote my first book wasn't The Bulletproof Executive. It was, what do you do before you get pregnant to make this better?
Yeah, we have to get into preconception care. We have to.
Yeah. Preconception is like the technical name for that. A lot of people haven't heard of it, but if you don't plan ahead and do that detoxing thing, about getting pregnant. It's about having a kid who's got everything possible for the kid to have. Anyone who's going to go to the huge amount of work it takes to be a parent, you know what it is. And if you're like, wait, if I could have just changed a couple things for that 9-month period, everything would have been easier later. Like, it's one of the simplest, most obvious investments you could ever make, but it's just not talked about. It kind of drives me crazy.
Yeah. Can I share a quick patient story on a kid with you?
Please. Yeah.
So I had this family bring their young son to me. I think he was about 6 at the time, and he had debilitating headaches and, no energy, and just, he's a kid, and they were horribly concerned about him, couldn't figure out anything to help him. And so they brought him to me, and I took the case, and I'm asking him questions, and for me, it was obvious. It was, this happened after they put new wall-to-wall carpet in their home.
Oh, yeah.
So I said, you got to take the carpet out. And they said, well, thank you, Dr. Cranian. They paid me my money. And I didn't see him again for about 9 months, maybe a year. And so in Seattle, they made the rounds to all the other docs. And they came back and I said, well, hey, how's everything going? No, he's the same. He's actually worse. Well, I haven't seen you in a year. What happened? Well, we went to all the other docs and I redid everything. I said, you got to take the carpet out. He said, no, we can't. We're not going to do that. And I said, well, look, do you have someplace, is grandma, did you have, grandma or somebody around that has a bedroom with no carpet that your son can sleep in? He said, oh, yeah, grandma lives. Yeah, grandma. Yeah, sure. So he went to sleep over at grandma's for 2 weeks. Almost complete recovery. And so I saw him. I said, okay, are you going to pull the carpet out now? And they went, okay. Because carpeting, people spend thousands of dollars. They save up to this. And we've got all these, ads on TV telling us that we're not good parents unless we have good carpeting for our babies, all that stuff.
Yeah, I can tell you that the floor I'm on right now is solid birch.
And there you go.
It was the same cost as quality carpet. Like, it's just nicer and cleaner.
So they tore out the carpet, a family affair, and unfortunately he helped. And if you've ever torn out carpet,
He helped? The sick kid?
Oh. And so he crashed. He crashed hard for like a month. But then he came back and he came back in probably I saw him about 12 years later. And he was getting ready to go into the Marines and a big strapping guy, healthy as an ox. And, they sent me a picture of him in his uniform. And it was just like, what we do to our kids without realizing it,
It's also interesting that if you have a weakness, the odds are that your kids inherited that weakness. When I was a kid, I lived in a basement that had been flooded, and it was a nice house, nice basement, and you couldn't see any damage to the walls, but I had paneling in the room where I slept. So behind the paneling was almost certainly tons of mold. One of the problems I had is asthma, constant rashes, brain fog, oppositional defiant, inability to manage emotions, but I also had nosebleeds like 5 and 10 times a day.
Oh my God.
And so what causes people to have nosebleeds all the time in your experience with environmental medicine?
Well, the most common thing I've seen from that is that the integrity of the blood vessels is shot.
Yes.
And that's from oxidative damage.
Yes.
Which is what all these toxicants do, is oxidative damage. And so that's a real part of that. And that means, of course, that you were breathing all these mycotoxins in that were causing all those issues. So it was both local and systemic for you.
And the mold is nasty because mycotoxins are an issue in mold, and different people clear different mycotoxins at different rates. But there's also the immune stimulating effects where the mold itself triggers autoimmunity apart from the toxin. So it's like a dual whammy.
Yeah, mold, the mycotoxins do the same effect to the immune system, robbing the white blood cells of glutathione, as does diesel exhaust or plastics or organophosphate pesticides or solvents or heavy metals, all these things that cause that immunotoxicity imbalance that I spoke of, increased asthma and allergies and autoimmunity and reduced ability to fight off infections. And it all mediates that through the glutathione. And if you're breathing any toxin or toxicant regularly, your body your lungs get totally depleted in glutathione. That's why all those World Trade Center rescue workers have this horrific lung problems, as they've totally robbed of all their glutathione, and they still got issues. All they need to do is replete them.
It's really interesting, too, because when you take vitamin C, it goes first to making glutathione in the liver and to replacing glutathione. And if you have some vitamin C left over, it goes to making collagen, because it's a required ingredient for this connective protein.
Tissue, yep.
So no wonder I was bleeding all the time, because I had oxidative stress and I didn't have enough vitamin C to make collagen to form healthy veins. I still have little purple veins on my eyelids. Like, I have systemic damage from growing up in constant oxidative stress.
Yeah. Some of the glutathione can get recycled. It can get recycled from oxidized back to reduce. But if you're in oxidative stress, that enzyme doesn't work. So yes. Oxidative stress also impinges that piece as well.
So the other day, my 8-year-old daughter came in with a big nosebleed. And she's a little bit freaked out. She's had a couple of them, but not that many. And she had another one the same day. And so I just looked at her, I said, oh, well, here's what you do with nosebleeds. Like, I'm a pro. I'll teach you how to do it. So suddenly she felt in charge of it. But then I'm like, all right, let's look at what you did. So she has a place in the forest where she likes to play. And it turns out that our lawn clippings had been dumped right there near that. And they'd been rained on. And because she's an awesome 8-year-old, she was making survival shelters, because, hey, that's how we roll, using this as thatching, like little fairy survival shelters, but little fairy houses using...
Uh-huh.
And she said, oh, yeah, there were spider webs on the mold, or on the grass. I said, no, those weren't spider webs. That was mold. And the reason your nose is bleeding is because I am sensitive to mold. You have my genes. And so here's what to do. So I manufacture a kind of highly absorbable glutathione with a lactoferrin attached, called glutathione force. So we give her a bunch of glutathione force, and later we give her the activated charcoal that I make. And you know, her nosebleeds quit within a day. When I was a kid, I would just bled 10 times a day for years on end and kept exposing myself. And I'm like, all right, I know my genetics. I know the environmental triggers. And yeah, my kids have those. Probably not to the extent I do, because we did our best epigenetically. But one of the things that everyone here, whether you have kids or not, if you do have kids later, knowing what works for you environmentally is probably going to work for your kids. And they don't teach you this anywhere.
Oh, right. Yeah. One of the other issues about kids is that not only do they get our genetics, but they get a portion of the toxicants that mom has built up in her. So that's one of the reasons why each succeeding generation, we're seeing them having more and more health problems, often right from the get-go. It used to be when I started practice that the chemically sensitive individuals were these, 40, 50-year-old women. But now we're having kids born who are chemically sensitive. Yes, they have their parents' genetics, but they also, got a bigger load from their mom than their mom did from her mom. Each succeeding generation is passing a bigger load of environmental toxicants to the fetus. And so that's why, childhood brain tumors are up, I don't know how many hundreds of times over what they used to be. Autism, it's all higher. The asthma and allergies, now it's hard to find a kid who's not allergic to anything. All these are clearly associated with environmental buildup, and that's part of the issue, is this being passed down from generation to generation. And so that gets us back to that critical point of preconception care, And are you familiar with Theo Coburn's endocrine disruptor site, her TEDx site? She recently passed. She's one of the greats in environmental medicine. She wrote Our Stolen Future.
Oh, I do know Our Stolen Future. Okay.
Yeah, and she's got a website called TEDx, the Endocrine Exchange. And you can plug in. She's got all these. They got the whole, all the weeks of pregnancy, and you can, you know, do, okay, if they're exposed to this phthalate at this week, and you get all the downstream problems. You know,
I not know this, given that I've wrote a huge book on this stuff? That's amazing. Okay, I'm excited, but I will include the I'll include a link to that in the show notes for people. And I just went to TEDx.com, but it took me to TED.com, so it must be.
Oh yeah, yeah. You can try. You can Google the Endocrine Exchange. I don't remember.
I'll find it.
I think it's TEDx. I thought it was TEDx.com, but maybe it's been a while since I've been.
Okay, I'll find it and we'll put it in the show notes because people don't know that. And the idea is that you have the most leverage at conception, or maybe probably right before conception, and every week of your life, starting then until you're 192, or however old you end up being, you have a little bit less leverage. It's harder to repair than it is to prevent. So your strategy of, hey, like, let's avoid the damage in the first place, let's not expose ourselves to these toxins, mm-hmm. let's let them clear, let's help them clear, that will make you perform better now, it'll make you live longer, and it'll make you live better.
Exactly.
One of the things, though, that we haven't touched on enough, and I wanted to point it out because it's in the title of your book. Your book is Clean, Green, and Lean, Get Rid of the Toxins That Make You Fat. Mm-hmm. Here's what happened to me. I was clearly toxic. I didn't believe in, you know, any of this environmental mumbo-jumbo. And not only that, I lived in moldy houses and all, so I was 300 pounds. And I decided I was going to lose weight. So I worked out an hour and a half a day, 6 days a week. I cut my calories to around 1,800 calories a day. And I did this for like 18 months. I beat myself up. Uh-huh. And at the end of this time, I could max out every machine in my local Nautilus. And I was still fat. And uh-huh. I ate half as much as my thin friends. And I ate healthier than they did too. Uh-huh. And granted, I was on a low-fat diet, which was a problem. And of course, I was trying to restrict calories. So people to this day go, that's not possible. It's calories in, calories out. Okay.
No.
My experience is no. And I can show you five studies of animals where, like, oh, you give them this chemical and they get fat on less food, which means it cannot be calories in,
because
calories out.
Because it you poison the mitochondria.
Yes.
And so, you know, the thing, the reason exercise, you lose weight with exercise is because the more exercise you do,
your muscles are going, golly, this is hard work. Yeah. We better make a few more mitochondria so it won't be so hard. So you actually make more mitochondria. So if you keep exercising regularly, you double, tripled, whatever, you know, your number of mitochondria in your body, so that when you're not exercising, when you're sitting at your desk driving in your car, you're burning more calories. So you don't, like, get on the machine at the gym. You don't weigh yourself before and after the gym and find out that you lost 5 pounds.
Yeah.
You lose the pounds over the week because your mitochondria, you've got more mitochondria that are working harder. And so losing weight is all about proper mitochondrial function. So when you're
it's not about calories in, calories out?
Well, no. And that's why it didn't work for you. Now, someone with really great functioning mitochondria, yeah, they can do that.
And it's pretty easy to lose weight at that point. They just,
yeah, when you've got good functioning mitochondria, then that is, you know, calories in, calories out, you know. Yeah,
but
mitochondria aren't working right. They're just not working right.
And if your calories are full of toxins that inhibit mitochondrial function, slowly it'll be harder and harder to lose weight because you've poisoned yourself with your crappy Pop-Tarts.
Oh yeah, and with the persistent pollutants, the ones that I used to really be mostly concerned about, so that's the PCBs, the DDT, all those that are known as POPs, persistent organic pollutants, mm-hmm. which by the way, the information on them being a risk for adult onset diabetes and obesity, the risk factors are huge.
Yeah.
These are fat soluble toxicants, so they get delivered as fat fuel right to the mitochondria.
Yeah.
And they're mitochondrial poisons. That's a big oops.
Well, one of the reasons that I'm so interested in mycotoxins, these mold toxins from the environment and from food, is that many of them are lipophoric, or these fat-soluble toxins, and they dissolve, just like the ones that are environmentally persistent, they dissolve into the cell membranes. Right? So the surface of our cells is made of little droplets of fat.
Right.
And so once you get these things that dissolve into fat, they're kind of smeared across everything, and then they get into the nervous system, which is also made of fat. And then it takes a couple years to replace half your cell membranes. Like there's a half-life there. So when I put myself on the Bulletproof diet, the super high fat, increasing bile turnover, making myself build new cells, make myself flush the fat out, I was also flushing the fat-soluble toxins. And it took a while, but when I first started on this really strong Bulletproof coffee, I was doing like 6 or 8 tablespoons of butter. I could not get enough. My body was screaming for it. And I do like a tablespoon or two in my coffee now, and that's like a maintenance dose for me. But for a while there, just until I managed to do some of that cell membrane repair, getting enough of any kind of fat seemed almost impossible. And that, I think that was my body just telling me what to do.
Yeah. And one other thing about the fat-soluble toxins, the reason why the more fat-soluble they are, the more persistent, because your body... Yeah. Doesn't get rid of fat. If fat is starting to exit your bowels, it gets, your body says, oh, sorry, we need you, and it
exactly.
pulls it back in, and it can't differentiate between EPA, DHA, vitamin A, vitamin E, or DDT and PCBs. They're fat molecules. So the any fat-soluble toxicant is harder to get out. So you've got that factor playing as well.
I have a protocol on the Bulletproof website that I did not publish in my book, and I call it the Rapid Fat Loss Protocol, RFLP. And it says in big letters, like, how to lose weight faster than you should. And the reason that I warn people about this is, like, look, if you're losing fat at a pound a day, and if you're obese, you can make yourself do that. But you've stored so much crap in the fat in your body that if you do it for very long, you're going to get profound fatigue and brain fog.
Yes.
Because you're going to unlock all this. So as you're losing the weight, you have to take toxin binding things. You have to upregulate glutathione.
Exactly.
You have to take antioxidants, or you can seriously jack up your brain for months. You're like a zombie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is there, what else should people do when they're losing weight to take advantage of your knowledge of the environment? Do you have other things in your book?
Or yeah,
that's one thing I'm concerned
about. In my
right?
book, this is a big issue with anybody that's doing weight loss, whether it's stomach stapling or exercising or whatever. One of the, a number of years ago, one of the students at the Southwest College, he from Virginia Beach, where he's practicing naturopathic medicine now, he and his wife owned a couple of Curve franchises. Mm-hmm. And he was telling me that it was very common for these middle-aged women to come in, start exercising, start losing weight, and then feel absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
And so they stop exercising because their toxicant got mm-hmm. dumped. So now I found the best way for people to reduce their circulating toxicant load, including people poisoned by Stachybotrys, and recover their health was colonic irrigations.
Okay.
Absolutely the best way, but you can't do one a week and expect to feel good. I'd have people do 5 in 2 weeks, and they'd go, oh, life, where have you been? You know, so they know that, and then they have to just keep doing enough to feel better. But there are a number of things that will help the body get clear fat-soluble toxicants out. Now, a lot of this is research done in both Japan and China, because in the 80s, there were spills of PCB in rice bran cooking oil in both of those countries. In China, it's called Yushen disease. In Japan, Yushou. Both means oil sickness.
Oh, wow.
And what they found, number one, rice bran fiber. And they've done studies on animals that they'll toxify the animal with dioxins and PCBs, and then they see how to clear it. Rice bran fiber increases the amount of dioxins and PCBs out of your body. So eating brown rice, you know, the macrobiotic diet.
But doesn't brown rice have 80 times more arsenic in it than white rice?
It does have more. If you wash it with water that's low arsenic, it reduces the arsenic level.
In brown or white? Because what I've read shows that you can reduce it in white that's been milled, but in brown it's stuck into the brown to the point that you don't want to do that.
Still, if you do it with the brown, you can reduce it.
Okay.
And there's some other great things on the arsenic as well that I could talk about. But the key there is the methylators.
Yes.
Methyl B12, methylfolate, because if you properly methylate the arsenic, you're cleared. But rice bran fiber clears these persistent toxicants.
Mm-hmm.
Chlorophyll clears the persistent toxicants. And so you can either do vegetables or you can take green drinks. And the third thing that clears persistent toxicants out, green tea.
Yep.
These have all been shown to increase the excretion of PCBs and dioxins out of the body. So you want to increase the amount of POPs, persistent organic pollutants, in the poop.
There's also modified citrus pectin is also pretty powerful for that as well.
It doesn't have the research on it that I would like. Other pieces of research there are a number of them, and they're stellar. So those are very, very good. Now, something that I have recommended to people, but certainly it does not sound naturopathic, but if they've got a high amount of these persistent pollutants in their body, which is not as common as it used to be, you're going to love me saying this, fat-free Pringles.
Good God. Why? You must have a reason for that.
It's got olestra in it, which is a non-absorbable fat. And anything that increases the fat content in the stool, the fat-soluble toxicants cross the mucous membranes and dive into it like a cool swimming pool on a hot day. There was actually a fella down in Australia. He was overweight.
Oh, Olestra's oat fiber. It's modified oat fiber. Yeah.
That I don't know.
Uh-huh. Beautiful. Okay, that is hilarious, but all right, I buy that. Fat-free Pringles. You heard that first on Bulletproof Radio.
Yeah, well, there was a patient that he was PCB poisoned, and he couldn't lose weight. Anytime he did, he'd get floor acne and feel terrible. And so he was in Australia, which doesn't allow Olestra, so these docs got the government to allow shipments of fat-free Pringles. I forget how many cases they gave him. He did 7 fat-free Pringles a day. At the end of 2 years, he was no longer had high blood pressure, no longer had high cholesterol, was no longer overweight, and his fat biopsy in PCBs went from like 22,000 parts per billion to like 131.
Wow.
And so you don't have to move a lot. So if you do the chlorophyll, the green tea, the rice bran fiber, or the brown rice on a daily basis, you can, in that same amount of time, clear out the persistence as well. Now, when I had people come to me, they were in health crises, so I had to use the colonics to get them better. But, you know, if you're not at that place, you can just do these healthy things. And doing a broccoli, green tea, curcumin or turmeric, rooibos, the African honeybush tea, all those enhance the liver transferase enzymes, including the glucuronyl transferase for the BPA and the glutathione transferase. They enhance those. So you can add those in as part of a healthy diet to really increase your, you know, clearing out the blood and then clearing it out of the body.
I use all of those things. I use activated charcoal as another thing that binds
the fats.
It binds the bile specifically to help bile. In fact, there's a chapter or a section in the Bulletproof Diet about bile turnover and how important that is for detoxing, right? And more fat in equals more fat out. What do you think of cholestyramine? This is something that Richie Shoemaker popularized. It's an anti-cholesterol drug. It's a resin. You drink it. It tastes like crap.
Yeah.
What's your take on that?
That also binds toxins and prevents the hepatic recycling.
I like that stuff.
It's interesting. In one of the studies published, maybe 15, 20 years ago, psyllium, the fiber psyllium, worked as well as cholestyramine in bile acid binding.
Lots of different fibers seem to do that. I used to take psyllium. There's the gas problem, and there's also a bunch of research on like irritation of the lining of the gut, where I finally concluded that it was probably causing more harm than good, but you could feel some good from taking it.
Yeah, I would find about 30-35% of my patients when I was using psyllium would react to it, and it would bind them up. My preference now is a combination of rice bran fiber, oat bran fiber, other whole food fibers with just a little kiss of psyllium in there.
Yeah, I could see that.
You know, so that's my preference. But anything, the cholestyramine, it's all preventing hepatic recycling, which is what the charcoal does. Absolutely. Yeah. So the other piece, you're working now with all the bowel and hepatic recycling. The other recycling is the kidney.
Yes.
And the best way to stop that is to alkalinize the urine to at least a pH of 7.
So just put a little baking soda in your water?
Yep. Yep.
Hold on. Do I need a $1,200 multi-level marketing water alkaline machine?
I think they're $5,000, right?
I guess it depends on which MLM you're joining. I must be in the discount one. I'm kidding. I don't do MLM.
Yeah.
But MLM being multi-level marketing pyramid schemes, if that's a term listeners don't know about. But I do have one of the, it's now almost 20-year-old, the first water alkaline machines out there. And I religiously drank alkaline water. I religiously stopped digesting my food because I was neutralizing my stomach acid with it. And I'm generally of the conclusion that some people benefit greatly when they get some alkaline water, but for a lot of people, it causes more harm than good. Like, it's not a panacea. This is my opinion, and I do not know your opinion on alkaline water. So I know you're going to say clean water is important. We're going to agree there, but
alkaline
water, yay or nay?
I hear good stories about it.
Yeah.
The diet is the better way to go to alkalinize your urine, but I often find that I need to give people an extra boost. There are a lot of supplements out there typically that have, bicarbonates in them that will help get them into the range that they need to get into.
Well, one warning for people listening, if you're not taking baking soda, number one, don't take it when you need to have acid in your stomach with a meal because it'll neutralize it. But number two, if you take too much of it, it can kill you. It can cause a heart attack. Right? So take very small, an eighth of a teaspoon to start. And I have, even on an eighth of a teaspoon, I tend to be too alkaline anyway. Funny enough, lots of vegetables do that. I've actually gotten short of breath and had like rapid heartbeat from a little bit more than an eighth of a teaspoon. So don't take a teaspoon in a glass of water without knowing that that's the right dose for you, because you really might not like what happens.
Yeah, and they've got, you can go to any pharmacy and get test strips for your urine. So test the urine first. So many people that are eating a good diet, Dave, I would not expect your urine to be acidic. I would expect it to be alkaline. Usually. So you wouldn't need the extra help.
In fact, in one of the, I do this thing called quarterly, where every quarter I send out a gift box full of like interesting biohacking stuff to people who subscribe. And I sent out a bottle of test strips that had protein in your urine, ketones, and about 8 other markers, including urinary pH, so you could figure out where are you there. So you're a fan of urine pH, but not necessarily alkaline water. All right, that's interesting.
Right, because... so many of the compounds, you know, what glutathione, when glutathione is bound to a compound in the liver, it becomes a mercaptoric acid. When you break down solvents, toluene, it goes to, you add amino acids to it, it becomes hippuric acid. These are all weak acids, and if your urine is acidic, those weak acids get sucked back in, so you're not clearing the toxicants. Merely taking it to a pH of 7 and you're peeing them out.
What do you think about apple cider vinegar, which is, well, it's an acid, it's acetic acid.
It's been around forever. A lot of great testimonials about it. I personally don't use it.
I think it tastes really good, and it's the lowest toxin vinegar I can find because the fermentation process breaks down all the bad stuff that grows on apples compared to like balsamic or something. But as a performance-enhancing substance, I think most people don't have problems with acetic acid, but there are those anecdotes about some people just get supercharged by guzzling vinegar. And I think it's safe to test it, but I don't know that it's ever worked for me.
Yeah, I'm not a vinegar. My palate doesn't float that way.
Got it. Well, this has been an absolutely fascinating discussion, and we're coming up on the end of the podcast. So there's a question that I'd like to ask you that every single guest has answered on Bulletproof Radio, except that one time when I forgot. And the question is, given all the stuff you know, not just about your 30 years in the profession of environmental medicine, but your whole life, if someone came to you tomorrow and said, look, I want to be better at everything, and I want to kick ass at life, what are the three most important things I should know? What would you tell them?
If I want to kick ass in life, the three most important things I would say was, one, you would have to be able to call bullshit on yourself.
I love it.
Two, you'd have to be able to forgive everybody in your life that you perceived has harmed you in any yes. way. Mm-hmm. And three, actually, by doing numbers 1 and 2, you would get your head out of your ass.
That's the first one out of 250-something episodes. I love it.
Yeah. And then 3, I'd have to say live love.
There you go. I love it. Well, thank you for sharing that wisdom. That's a fantastic answer, and no one has ever said get your head out of your ass before, and I'm surprised, but you nailed it.
They have All right. to hear the loud pop.
There you go. Yeah, it should be forceful when you expel your head. Mm-hmm. Now, your book is called Clean, Green, and Lean, Get Rid of the Toxins That Make You Fat. And where can people find out more about your work? What URL should they go to?
www.criniononopinion.com. C-R-I-N-N-I-O-N, and then the word opinion.com. I do trainings for physicians, and I have a monthly subscription podcast where I update docs on the latest research articles in environmental medicine.
Awesome. I will have to get subscribed to that, even though I'm not a doctor, so that way when you come across something really cool, I can get a cool fact of the day to put on the show.
I put a lot of effort into this. There's cool stuff there.
Are you connected with the Environmental Health News people, EHN?
I have a subscription to them, and I read their little email every morning. And then I post it on, I've got also an environmental medicine Facebook page, and I post a lot of that stuff up there.
I love it. So for people interested in what the environment's doing to you, which is ground zero for biohacking, Crinian Opinion. Mm-hmm. There's a subscription service, and I've got to plug Environmental Health News, which is Absolutely. very tightly tied with Environmental Working Group, another organization that I
support.
Fantastic. Yeah, fantastic. I support them financially, and I know some of the board members, and hats off to that kind of work, because if we're going to continue kicking ass as a species, we kind of need to get that.
Exactly.
Thanks again for being on Bulletproof Radio. Have an awesome afternoon, and I look forward to having you on again sometime.
Okay, thanks so much, Dave. I really appreciate it.
If you appreciated today's episode as much as I did, this is great fun for me. If you learned something useful today, do me a favor. Just go out and share this with someone else. And you can do that in a couple ways. The first way is just tell someone what you learned so that they can benefit from this knowledge. The second thing you can do, if you want to be all technical about it, is you can go to the transcripts on the Bulletproof website, and this entire conversation is now available for you to read. You can click on any link, on any section of that, and it'll take you right to YouTube, and you can share just that link, just that snippet of video that you care about the most. So this is a way for you to share this knowledge with lots of people. I really appreciate it if you take the time to do that. Just post the 30-second snippet where we talk about the most interesting stuff. Start a conversation. That's what this is all about. Have a great day.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.